You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, March 3rd, 2014. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting to you live in the literal, but not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building.
In the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. On today's program, we're going to be talking about the Oscar Pistorius murder trial in South Africa for the whole hour and a half.
Yes, we are. Yeah. The most important story
The most important story in the world. No, in all seriousness, we'll be talking with Professor Dominique Arel. He's the chair of the Ukrainian Studies Program at the University of Ottawa. We're going to be talking about the Russian invasion of Crimea, the political context of Ukraine. Hopefully he'll situate what's going on there for us. Also, we're going to be talking with
Kai Newkirk of 99rise.org. Now, his name and organization might not be familiar to you, but you certainly saw his work this past week when he protested at the Supreme Court and took what is believed to be the first ever video recording from inside SCOTUS hearing.
I think that's true. So two great interviews for you. Also, some more thoughts on Bitcoin, why Bitcoin fails the test of what's needed for an alternative currency and new forms of financial services for people who actually need it, namely the poor, the marginalized, and others who are the most exploited by the financial system.
A Republican, get this might shock you, has something to say about rape.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it's stunning. That really is the only word for that story. Tucker Carlson was
goes on Alex Jones.
Goes
yes.
on Alex Jones. Jeez. And basically, well, you learn a couple of things from that. One is the whole Republican outreach thing, not really going to happen. And how do you bridge establishment preppy trust fund babies like Tucker Carlson and insane conspiracy theorist fraudsters like Alex Jones? Race. So we'll get to that. Howie Kurtz calls out Stephen Colbert. That's just funny. And obviously,
hundreds of protesters protest the Keystone Pipeline in front of the White House. A policeman from Maryland, I believe, has some interesting statistics to share with us all about the dangers of marijuana use.
They really are shocking.
We got much, much more right here on MB Squared Mondays.
Indeed.
On the Majority Report.
Indeed. So we're going to take a brief break. We'll be right back with Professor Dominique Arel. We'll be right back.
And them say, here comes trouble, here comes the danger, sent by the Savior, welcome the Rasta youths. I and I a start recruit, soldiers for Selassie I army. Aye. Here comes trouble, here comes the danger, welcome the Savior, welcome the Rasta youths. You're not for axes who are the general issue in a warning. Jah people them a ball, said them tired of mediocre. Evil a go fall when we tried in Ethiopia. Believing from Dan, call them life no easy motor. Even Bantan said it's not an easy road. Operation, occupy the motherland. Calling all soldiers to kind each other along. From creation, he writing a job plan, but chronics can't do it alone. So I'm recruiting soldiers coming from near and far, I choose.
executing. Selassie I works and me lost a far right through. And them say, here comes trouble, here comes the danger. Sent by the Savior, welcome the Rasta youth. I'm an a start recruit, soldiers for Selassie I army. Here comes trouble, here comes the danger. Welcome the Savior, welcome the Rasta youth. You're not for oxes who are the general issue in a warning board. Waving the banner red, green and gold. It is such a honor prophecies unfold. Discovered on stones, on trees and scrolls. And even in the stories that Jesus told. Bubble. Rasta youth must inherit the earth. Can't sit down, Jaja send me for work. Bring the fire in a room, Jaja send me for purge. But I can't do it alone. Rasta recruiting. Soldiers coming from near and far, I choose executing. Selassie I works and be lost a far right choose. Here comes trouble, here comes the danger. Sent by the Savior, welcome the Rasta youth. I and I start recruit soldiers for Selassie I army. Hey. Here comes trouble, here comes the danger. Welcome the Savior, welcome the Rasta youth. You know fi ask is who are the general issue in a warning, hey. Left and right, the soldiers are gone. Left, right, the soldiers are come. Hey, could I never throw it down, oh boy. Yeah, how we say left.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. I am Michael Brooks, and joining us now is a Professor Dominique Ariel. Of the University of Ottawa, where he is the chair of the Ukrainian Studies Program. Professor, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So I want to get the context here. Obviously, a lot has happened over the past 48 hours. And I would like you to start by maybe situating a couple of parts of the conversation of what's happening in Russia and Ukraine for us that I think are kind of important to sort of set the stage for this discussion. And I think the first step is to kind of clearly define, there's a lot of different rumors and frames on who exactly made up the Ukrainian opposition. Everything from this is a progressive and open civil society movement, which I have to tell you that would be certainly what I'm inclined to believe. And then there's this other notion that it's actually very reactionary, very right-wing, and that Jewish citizens of Ukraine, Russian-speaking citizens of Ukraine, have a real reason to worry. And obviously that leads to the justification for Russian intervention that they're presenting for invading Crimea. So can you set the stage for us of explaining what this new, I guess it isn't opposition anymore, what this new Ukrainian leadership is, and perhaps what you think is really motivating the Russian action?
Okay. Well, the opposition that is now is not a majority in parliament is comprised of three parties. The party of the new prime minister, Mr. Yatsenyuk, who was foreign minister in the years of Yushchenko. I would call that party a center, rather a centrist party, closely associated with, actually it is the party of Yulia Tymoshenko, the former prime minister who was imprisoned for 2.5 years, but is currently, has been released, is not quite back in politics yet. You have the party of Mr. Vitaly Klitschko, who is a former world champion in boxing, and who launched his political career about a year and a half ago in parliamentary elections. And he campaigned largely on the issue of corruption and accountability, did extremely well, and was one of the leaders on Maidan during the 3-month demonstration. The third party is a nationalist right party. Some would say far right or populist right. Mm-hmm. Party is called Svoboda, which means freedom in Ukrainian. There is no question that this party, in terms of how it uses symbolisms of World War II, when you had the popular insurrection, in Western Ukraine against the Soviet Union. And that movement committed, well, targeted, let me put it that way, Jewish and Polish civilians. Mm-hmm. There is no question that on the whole issue of World War II, the Jewish question, this party is problematic, on the other hand. And to the surprise of most observers, this party throughout the three-month demonstrations that turned into a rebellion, the party actually acted as a parliamentary party, fairly responsible. And for instance, the ill-fated agreement that was signed in extremist a few hours before everything fell apart, that agreement that had been brokered by three representatives of the European Union, and that called basically, you know, Mr. Yanukovych conceded just about everything but his position. That accord was also signed by the Svoboda Party, but it was then rejected on the square and Maidan. The most troublesome element is actually in current Ukrainian politics are not the three parties that have now formed a government in a coalition, but an organization that arose from the demonstration that call itself the right sector, Pravi Sektor, so basically activists, that formed the backbone, most likely, of the demonstrations, particularly when the demonstrations turned violent. This is a movement that we know little about, that appears to share far-right views.
Some people have drawn an analogy between the group you're talking about and Golden Dawn, the overtly neo-fascist party in Greece. I mean, do you think that's a fair comparison?
This is profoundly wrong. This is a profoundly wrong analogy.
Yeah.
We have to understand that the symbolism, first of all, when the Russian state officially considers that fascists came to power in Kiev, and justify its current military intervention because, again, of the threat of fascism. We have to understand what fascism means in Russian vocabulary, or in, you know, the connotation it has in Russian political culture, for that matter, in post-Soviet political culture. The fascists are the Nazis. That is, in the memorialization of the war in the Soviet Union and now in Russia, we never hear about German invasion of the Soviet Union, always a fascist invasion of the Soviet Union. So the fascists are the Nazis. But in terms of the Ukrainian nationalists, it's not that they back then or they now espouse any kind of a Nazi or fascist conception of the world, but they associate in terms of, you know, their symbolism, their sense of where they're coming from, with a movement that, for tactical reasons, allied itself with the Germany during World War II, in the context where actually they come from territories that had never been part of the Soviet Union or Soviet Ukraine, and these territories were annexed by the Soviet Union in violation of international law that came about following the secret agreements between Hitler and Stalin, or known in history books as the Molotov-Ribbentrop Agreement.
Right.
So even though that movement committed, certainly was involved in massacres of Jews and Poles, they fought, in terms of their insurgency, against a Soviet occupation. But the discourse we hear from Russia is that they're fascists, they're Nazis, and so forth. This is very, very different from Golden Dawn, which actually espouses a fascist mythology.
Yeah, it's very overt. I mean,
symbolism.
I want to actually build off of that because I think this is an important point. And obviously, again, correct me if this is problematic way of viewing it. But it seems like with Russia and with Yanukovych himself, he's also talked about this protecting Ukraine from fascism. But it seems an interesting dual track because it seems that Russia is presenting to the world or its global audience, to the extent that there is a global audience, this is about protecting Ukraine from fascists, this is about protecting Ukraine from anti-Semitism. But then on the other hand, within the domestic context, of Russia and with Yanukovych as well, the argument seems to be very different. It seems to be protecting Ukraine from European Union. Some of the anti-gay agenda in Russia has gotten mixed up with this. And in fact, also a certain type of anti-Semitism and conspiracing about Jewish power as well. So are those two tracks happening? Is that how you see it?
Well, on anti-Semitism and the whole Jewish question, we have to set the record straight. As I said, there is, in terms of what we could call historical memory, it is an important issue about, you know, whether Ukrainian movements, you know, have to come to terms with what happened in World War II. The same way that every country has come to terms with what happened in their own past. But in terms of the current situation, and you could, you know, you could ask the chief rabbi in Kiev and many other Jewish sources, there was absolutely no anti-Jewish dimension to the Maidan uprising. Actually, the anti-Semitism came from state forces.
Right.
You had simply had to go to the website of Berkut, this infamous special forces that were involved in brutality against civilians. This anti-Semitic tropes were all over. So it is really not an issue now. Well, it is because there are all these accusations. What we've observed in the last 7-10 days in Ukraine, particularly in western Ukraine, to some extent in Kiev, there's been a relative breakdown of civil order. That is, at the height of the rebellion in Kiev, basically state authorities, I wouldn't say collapsed, but were taken over by insurgents in western Ukraine, taking over, you know, the regional administration, sometimes even the police and so forth. And we have reports of activists basically acting like vigilantes.
Mm-hmm.
And we have reports of, you know, public humiliation rituals and so forth. What we don't have reports of are civilians being targeted. Mm-hmm. Properties have been targeted. So these are, you know, concerns. But they are blown out of all proportion by the Russian state to justify that suddenly all kind of Russian speakers or so-called compatriots, that's a word we should come back to in the conversation, are under physical threat, which is actually in the resolution of the Russian Duma of last Saturday, and in particular in Crimea, where there's absolutely no evidence of any of that happening.
Right.
If it's happening, it's in western Ukraine, far, 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 thousands of miles away from eastern Ukraine and Crimea.
So let's go to the Russian action. And I guess the basic question, or a two-part question for me, is one, what is this motive as simple as it appears to be, which is just a kind of crude exercise of exerting regional power? That's what it seems like to me. And then the second question I have is, and maybe this is a misperception of Western analysts, but I think there was a perception that Russia would certainly retaliate in terms of economically, in terms of flow of energy and heat, but not necessarily take such an extreme step. So in those two questions, what's sort of really driving this, and was it a misnomer to really expect anything other than the action they've taken?
Well, no one expected it, mm-hmm. really. I mean, who could expect that Russia would actually effectively declare war on Ukraine?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking to you now, it's midday on Monday, and Russia issued an ultimatum by 5 a.m. local time. The Ukrainian troops in Crimea will not surrender, then the Russian troops will storm their garrisons. I mean, this is an act of war.
Absolutely.
And the resolution Saturday, I mean, Crimea was bad enough because it's a clear violation of the agreements that were signed in the 1990s to secure the international, you know, the territorial integrity of Ukraine. But the resolution doesn't limit itself to Crimea, to Ukraine. So now we have the very probable or possible expansion of this invasion to eastern Ukraine. no one could have ever imagined that actually Russia would go to war over Ukraine. I mean, it's one thing to use economic levers or pressure, such as shutting down basically the custom points that already happened in August and then in the run-up to the EU summit in Lithuania in November. Russia, you know, have been using, well, let's say, media war, in as much as Ukrainians, and particularly in eastern Ukraine, watch Russian television, but actually use military means. It is absolutely unprecedented. Unprecedented in, let's say, in the post-Cold War, in the post-war era. What really troubles me, I mean, we have here from the New York Times this morning, Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany told Mr. Obama by telephone on Sunday that after speaking with Mr. Putin, she wasn't sure he was in touch with reality.
Yeah.
People briefed on the call said, in another world, she said, a world that doesn't appear to be grounded in actual empirical facts. So we had the Russian Duma on Saturday in this kind of rushed decision to issue the resolution. I mean, the discussion was basically about the so-called genocide that was happening in Ukraine and the 150,000 refugees coming out of Ukraine, which bear, again, no relationship to reality.
I think that's a very important point to underline, Professor. I think it's very key. It's not when you talk about numbers like that, we're not even talking about an exaggeration or being loose or something. You're really talking about things that are out of whole cloth. They're just not accurate.
They're not accurate, and they remind ourselves almost of a different era, which turned out catastrophically when you had basically Mr. Putin has essentially absolute power in Russia, and the media broadcasting that kind of, I'll choose my words here, that kind of narrative, let me put it that way, surreal narrative that is now being co-opted and taken by the main political elite, you know, those voting laws in parliament, is extremely worrisome. Because, you know, what will be next? The attempt to essentially split Ukraine in two, destroy the Ukrainian state? I mean, are we thinking Czechoslovakia 1938, essentially?
Right.
Is that what's on the books? Because it is pretty clear that for Mr. Yanukovych thinks that, but he has no power left. He's convinced that everything that happened in the last 3 months is a Western conspiracy. That the Maidan mobilization was basically an intervention by the West.
Right.
Meddling.
Right.
And, that he still thinks that, as was revealed in the press conference, is, you know, interesting enough, except he's kind of a footnote right now, but Mr. Putin is not a footnote. And he appears to believe the same thing. Which, again, I mean, we can discuss what it means, you know, Western intervention, Western political support, but for 3 months, essentially, the support was verbal. There was no evidence of any other kind of support than just moral support by the EU and the United States or Canada until the very, very end when the personal sanctions were taken. But that followed, actually, the decision by the Ukrainian state
to use live
ammunition against civilians that they crossed the line.
No, I think, again, it's a very important point when you're discussing this decision-making process, that it's not all when leaders like this talk about Western conspiracies that may not, again, have empirical validity. It doesn't mean that they're being cynical. They may, in fact, I mean, they could be being cynical, but they may, in fact, actually really believe this view. As we move towards winding this conversation up, what are... this is a very bleak picture we're outlining here, obviously, first and foremost for Ukraine, but it definitely has broader implications. What are the pressure points that could actually be applied to Russia realistically that may halt this catastrophic movement of events?
I mean, that's a very tough question. We have, you know, we have experts, I mean, that are telling us, you know, something we kind of already knew, that most of Russian export are raw materials and energy. So that's energy. I mean, Europe is dependent on gas and oil from Russia. So the issue of sanctions, you know, a la Iran, and with, I mean, would now not seem to be realistic, because that would mean a very, very high cost, very high level of pain for European states.
Who are already experiencing a lot of pain, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what has been raised is the issue of personal sanctions. Now, will that be enough? Probably not. But the what is interesting and, well, fundamental, actually, because the same dynamics applied in Ukraine, is you have a contradiction. Some would call that an hypocrisy. That is, you hear discourse, you know, from the Ukrainian state up until the collapse of the Yanukovych regime. You hear the same discourse in Russia about a Western conspiracy. So protecting yourself against, you know, Western intervention. But at the same time, in terms of investments, in terms of, you know, moving away money acquired through all kinds of means, in terms of sending your kids to get an education, in terms of acquiring property and vacationing,
right.
It's all in the West. It's all in the West.
Buying soccer teams.
The same West, the same West that supposedly calls the shot or seeks to intervene. So at the elite level, and we're talking about a very broad stratum of elite here, it's, let's call it, for lack of a better word, a love-hate relationship with the West. Because when everything is said and done, the money is not in Russia. The kids are not in Russia, and the vacations are not in Russia.
Right.
And the nice houses, they're in the West. And so actually the West, European states and the U.S. and Canada, have moved on in terms of the applying the sanctions. So for the Ukrainian elite, a lot of their assets already have been frozen, and the list have been released. If something of that sort were to apply to Russia, you would see, of course, a lot of complaint, but a lot of pain. Now, is that sufficient in a system which is essentially an autocracy right now, where you don't have countervailing levers of influence? Certainly not the parliament or lower or higher chamber, because you don't have competitive elections in Russia, and all these decisions are taken unanimously in the semblance of debate. And you don't have a free media, except for some courageous outlets on the web and some radio stations. And that is also very worrisome, because power is extraordinarily concentrated in the hand of one man.
Absolutely. Well, Professor Dominique Ariel, we're going to have to leave it there. Professor Ariel is the chair of the Ukrainian Studies Department at the University of Ottawa. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Take care. All right, folks. So I think the next interview will be slightly more encouraging, at the very least. But obviously, we're going to keep following this. And I hesitate to say something is completely unexpected or shocking, but it was interesting to hear Professor Ariel kind of vindicate the view that I thought the Russians will definitely try to punish the Ukrainians for this happening. But the idea of an actual military invasion, it really is stunning. Yeah, obviously we're going to just have to keep following it and hope for the least worst outcome. We're going to take a few seconds break here. I'm going to put on the Mission Impossible music. Or no, you got music. All right. And we'll be right back with Andrew Newkirk of 99% Rising.
Don't you think it's strange that there's a way of how you looked and how you acted? How you looking, how you act, and how you think, and pretend they're not the same as you. Do you know about his strength and convictions, or how she puts all the faith in religion? Did we take the time to really discover how little we know about each other? Keep us from saying anything, can't separate from everything. And all of this really means it. We're one in a crowd, and you're paranoid of every sound. You're never frank, you won't miss any.
We are back. We are back on the Majority Report. My name is Matt Binder. And joining us now, we're going to actually first play about a 20-second clip from this video that came out. Joining us, though, is Kai Newkirk. He's an organizer with 99 Rise, and he did something quite amazing. Let's play the clip first.
I rise on behalf of the vast majority of the American people who believe that money is not speech, corporations are not people, and our democracy should not be for sale to the highest bidder. Overturn Citizens United. Keep the cash in production.
Now, I'm not sure if you heard that, Kai, but I'm sure you can easily relive that moment. What you heard there was video from Kai protesting inside the Supreme Court. This is believed to be the first ever video from inside SCOTUS. That's correct, right, Kai? Oh wait, I'm sorry. One second, we're having a technical difficulty here. Okay, there we go. That's correct, right?
Yeah, that's my understanding. It was the first time.
So before we get to the actual filming of SCOTUS, I think the issue that you want to bring forward by videotaping SCOTUS should be talked about first, because it's clearly the more important issue here. You use this video, this filming of SCOTUS, to basically shine a light on what's being called Citizens United 2. It's the campaign finance case. We've talked about it on this show before. McCutcheon versus the Federal Election Commission. Kai, can you tell us a little bit about what this case is about and why you chose this case to shine this light on?
Absolutely. Yeah, we call the McCutcheon case Citizens United 2.0, referring to the decision that the Supreme Court made in 2010, which basically allowed corporations, unions, and individuals to spend unlimited amounts of money to influence and control our elections. And that's what led to things like Sheldon Adelson, a Las Vegas billionaire, spending well over $100 million of his own money in the 2012 election. And the McCutcheon case would basically do for individuals what Citizens United did for corporations, and in particular would allow them to give money directly to candidates, PACs, and parties. Right now there's a cap of $123,000 that an individual can give. And an Alabama businessman, Sean McCutcheon, is suing because he thinks you should be able to give unlimited amount of money to corrupt our public officials. I don't know about you, but not many Americans can spend $123,000 in a year to influence and control our politics. And we need to empower voters and everyday Americans to direct what's happening in our democracy.
Oh, I completely agree with you. I doubt I even have $5 to spare sometimes to these organizations.
That's right.
So let's get to the filming of SCOTUS, because this is shining a light on this McCutcheon case, because this is historic. You and your group with 99 Rise went to a hearing. Was it the McCutcheon hearing? I'm sorry. Or was it a different hearing that you went to that day?
The day I was there, they were just talking about patents, but there was a chance that they could be announcing the decision about the McCutcheon case. It's not announced exactly when that's going to happen. So we were there on a day that they could be announcing it. They didn't end up doing that, but we wanted to make sure that the voice of the vast majority of Americans who disagree with this and think that corruption is a serious problem that needs to be reduced, that voice was heard in the courtroom, because we feel like this has become a profound crisis and that we're not going to be able to deal with the urgent problems that we have as a country unless we can first solve this crisis of corruption and put our democracy back in the hands of everyday Americans.
So when was this? This was Tuesday or Wednesday
this
of last week?
This past Wednesday.
Got it.
Yeah.
This past Wednesday. So you went down there. And so how did you how many of you were there? Are you able to say that? Because I know you don't want to name any names, so I'm not sure if you want to give out too much information, but how many of you were able to pull this off together?
It was a small team. We went in just like anybody else. The Supreme Court's open to the public, just not to the eyes of the world. Went in, we were inside the chamber. I got to be honest, it was pretty scary. It's pretty intimidating to stand up and try to speak truth to power in that way, but, you know, I just try to think about all the folks that inspired me to sacrifice to do what's right, even when it's hard, and all the folks that are hurting in our country need a government that works for everybody, not just the super rich.
I just want to tell you, you certainly pulled it off great. If you watch the video, we're going to add that 20-second clip in the YouTube clip we make of this interview.
Great.
But if you watch that video, you are good. You do not sound nervous at all. You're up there, and you just let them hear it, and loud and clear. The message was certainly received. But going a little bit further back, do they check for cameras or cell phones or anything like that when you enter?
Of course, yeah. I mean, you go through a pretty standard security screening. And like I said, you know, we just went in like anybody else, had a couple of hidden cameras, and were able to get this unprecedented footage. And I've been just blown away by the response of people around the country on social media and the interest in the media, people who've been inspired. And I think, like the vast majority of Americans, 96% of people, you know, agree that reducing the corruption of money in politics is a real priority, but not enough people have really been moved to act with hope and really do something about it. And that's what I've been encouraged so much to see, is that so many people have been inspired and said that they want to step up and be part of this, and have gone to 99rise.org and have joined and said that they want to be part of a movement and take courageous action themselves with others to end this crisis of corruption. And that, to me, makes me tremendously hopeful. And if spending a night in jail in D.C., you know, going through being really scared sitting in the Supreme Court room and getting up and speaking helps to do that, then, you know, I'm just tremendously grateful to have been part of it.
Was there a specific event or action that took place that brought you to this issue of the McCutcheon case of Citizens United in general, whether it's the previous Citizens United ruling or what's being deemed Citizens United 2.0 with this case? Was there a specific action that brought your attention to it that maybe in addition to you shining this light on, we can inspire other people to become active in fighting this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, it's been a long process. I've been a community organizer in different movements for over a decade now, and just have come to see, I think, like many others, that until we really address the question of corruption and the fact that a tiny percentage of people in our country, less than 1%, super wealthy folks, have effective control of our democracy and can veto potential reforms, until we really address that, we're not going to be able to deal with the tremendously urgent problems that we face, whether that's climate change, whether it's preventing another crash on Wall Street, dealing with inequality, you name it. And as I was working on things over the years, I came to see, look, we have to focus on this. And the good news is that so many Americans agree with us that this needs to change. Our challenge is to inspire them to actually take action and to be willing to make sacrifices. And that's why I did what I did. And I've been really inspired to see the response. And I encourage your listeners, if they agree that we need to do something about this and they want us to have the bright future that we deserve in our country, go to 99rise.org, step up. If you've never done anything like this before, that's fine. If you've done it before and you're ready to do it again, join us. And I'm confident that even if a small chunk of that 96% of people that agree with us are willing to actually put their money where their mouth is and put their bodies on the line, disrupt business as usual, we can change this. We can make history. We can open up the door to a bright future for our country. So I call on folks to join us.
Were you and your group, because I'm looking at the with the name here, 99 Rise, were you active in the Occupy movement?
Yeah, many of us were. We were inspired by the sacrifice of folks make camping out for weeks in Zuccotti Park and around the country and then the world, and wanted to carry that vision forward. And so we started an organization to train people in nonviolent direct action, nonviolent civil resistance, and to focus on this issue of corruption and big money in politics as the first issue that we have to win to deal with inequality, economic injustice in general, climate change, and all the other issues that face us.
I just want to move back into the courtroom for a second.
Sure.
What was the reaction from the people in the room? Were the Supreme Court justices able to hear you? Did they turn? Uh-huh. Did they stop what they were saying? Did the people surrounding you, did they have anything to say? Did anyone, you know, heckle you, tell you to sit down as you're speaking out?
Absolutely not. I mean, it all happened very quickly in about 15 seconds. I think people just sort of looked up in shock, you know, and the Supreme Court justices, I couldn't see them very well. To be honest, it did look like Scalia had like a little smirk or something like that, or sort of a look of bemused surprise. He was the only one I had a really good look at. But then I just saw, you know, the security staff coming towards me, and I tried to get out what I had to say before I got tackled. So I wasn't really aware too much of what was going on with others, but I just kind of noticed, like, you know, folks kind of generally turn and look. And people were shocked. And, you know, the Supreme Court, I don't know if you heard, they actually deleted the audio from the official, you know, recording.
I heard about that, yes.
From the transcript. But to me, that's really funny because, you know, the sketch was already out. And the video has been seen by almost 500,000 people now, I think, in total, and many more through the media. They can't hide what happened, the truth and the facts of what happened. And I think it shows in some ways that this had a real impact, that they're trying to kind of erase it from the record, which can't be done. I mean, people see what's happening. They're making these decisions without the level of transparency that they should. And while that's not the central issue for us, it's corruption and the role the Supreme Court has played in deepening that, and the fact that they could take it even further with this concussion case, they're not going to be able to stop this resistance by, you know, erasing some audio from a recording. You know, people have seen it. People have been inspired, and it's only going
to
grow.
I believe the video on YouTube, I mean, this is to really, I mean, while it's a historic video, I mean, to be able to shoot it, it's very, like, you know, it's very maybe just a few seconds in the video actually are shot show the Supreme Court justices, because you guys are really trying to do this on the down low. And this video, this just handheld shot video undercover, has over 200,000 views as of right now in less than a week. I mean, people have seen this. It's amazing to me it's great. So just when you were taken away, did the police officers say anything to you? You said you spent the night in jail. Can you just give us a little bit about maybe with that also what it exactly it is that they're charging you with?
It's this kind of obscure Supreme Court specific law against that bars firearms, fireworks, and haranguing and loud objectionable language and so on.
That's quite an odd thing to just all bunch together, isn't it?
Yeah, it is strange. I certainly did stand up and speak, you know, freedom of speech. You know, I pled not guilty. I got a trial coming up later this month, and we'll be letting folks know about that at 99rise.org if they want to support. They took me down for questioning. I spent the night in jail, got out the next afternoon. It's not fun, but you know, we in 99 Rise are following humbly in a tradition, a long tradition of Americans who use nonviolent civil disobedience to fight to extend and defend democracy, from the abolitionists to the suffragists to the civil rights movement to the dreamers of today, young, the undocumented youth. And we've realized, like they have, that sometimes you have to put your body on the line. You have to be willing to disrupt business as usual to win change. And we're facing a profound fight in our country to really save our democracy. Give us the power to really make the changes we need to have a good future in our country. And if that means some of us have to risk arrest, go to jail, fast, do long marches, that's fine. You know, there's joy in the struggle, the sacrifices that we have to make. But there's tremendous power in it. And I invite all your listeners who agree with this, as I know the vast majority of them do, to go to 99rise.org, sign up, and be part of this movement.
Kai Newkirk of 99rise.org, thank you for joining us. I just want to add, you speaking out is the first time someone disrupted the Supreme Court since 2006 when a protester shouted something about Jesus during an abortion case. I just like to say that me personally, I think your cause is much more noble. and then also,
thank you, brother.
This is the first video footage we have ever, I believe, of from inside the Supreme Court. And it's thanks to what you and your group have done. Again, that website is 99rise.org. Thank you for shining this light on getting money out of politics. And thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, brother. We appreciate it.
Take care.
Sure.
All right, folks. That is the free half for you today. But that's not all for members.
No, indeed
because
not.
Because members are getting some fun, fun stuff. Coming up, we will delve right into Social Security and the latest CBO report. And no. That's a Sam better fun half. We've got some interesting stuff for you. We've got... No, we love that stuff, of course. But we love that Sam calls it the fun stuff.
It is pretty funny.
Folks, did you know that dozens and dozens of people have been dying of marijuana overdose in Colorado?
I think nobody knows that.
Nobody knows that because it's not true.
Right.
Unless you happen to be a police chief in Maryland who's fighting to not decriminalize marijuana. We also have a wonderful video of Tucker Carlson of the Daily Caller, also a Fox News host, talking about race with known, race
conspiracy
race
theorists
in America, professor,
yeah.
Race relations.
I see where you're going.
Collegiate.
Yeah.
Alex Jones.
Premier
Alex Jones.
Race commentators.
Alex
United
Jones.
States. Yeah.
Let me tell you something, Tucker.
Oh, let's not even do it now.
Yeah. You gotta wait. You gotta wait for that.
Listening to that guy.
And a Republican has something to say about rape, which they've never had something to say about before. We got tons of stuff for you.
Why Bitcoin
half.
Doesn't work for the people who need alternatives in the financial sector most. I'm looking forward to that.
And if we keep telling you all these stories, we're going to run out of time to actually do them.
Yeah, so we're going to go to the better half of the show. But as always, you can become a member.
Majority.fm. Click become a member. You could join. It's less than a cup of coffee a day. It's the same price as the WWE Network. we've got more content than they do. Up right now, so I'll tell you that.
Awesome.
What else? We support this show by buying all your junk through Amazon at the Amazon through our Amazon affiliate page. You could go there at MajorityReportKickback.com. Get the app MajorityApp.com. The app is free. It's a great way to get new listeners to the show. Just grab their phone, download the app on their phone. You'll be able to do it because it's free. You won't need any of their credit card information.
I did it. I was in L.A. A couple weeks ago, and this guy was you know, you have to take cars everywhere there. It's insane. And this guy was talking about how much he liked H. John Benjamin. And I was like, well, he's the voice of the show.
There
Boom.
You go.
Put it in his phone right there. Now he's a listener.
There you go.
That's exactly what you
So we know this guy's at least listening to the first 30 seconds of the program.
Yeah, it's like, you are listening. It's like, all right, that's great. I'm all set.
So follow us on Facebook. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/majorityreport. Follow us on Twitter, at MajorityFM. I'm going to really push the YouTube right now, youtube.com/SamCedar. We are just a few hundred subscribers away from 30,000 subscribers. That's a lot to some people and not a lot to others. But let me tell you, to those who think it's not a lot, when people see a number like that, when they see, you know, 29,200, and then they see a number of 30,100, that's a big difference to them. So do become a subscriber on YouTube. It's absolutely free. YouTube.com/SamCedar. And we will see you all in the better.
Fun half.
Half. The fun half on MB Squared, Matt and Mike, Binder and Brooks, Mondays.